You're listening to the winning literary show, Off the Shelf Books Talk Radio, live with host Denise Turney, author of the books Long Walk Up, Portia, Love Pour Over Me, Spiral, Love Has Many Faces, and Rosetta's Great Hope. Turn up your dial and get ready for a blast of feature author interviews, 411 on book festivals, writing conferences, and so much more. Ready? Let's go.
Don't stop when you're tired. Stop when you're done. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Off the Shelf Books for this Saturday, March the 9th. We are in March already. But I want to repeat that quote before we start going into today's show. Don't stop when you're tired. Stop when you're done. And that, the person who made that quote is anonymous. But what a beautiful, beautiful quote. Just keep going till you finish. Happy Women's History Month. It's just so many things. Spring is coming. And depending on where you live in the United States, this weekend is daylight savings time. So we spring forward this weekend. A lot of people, I'm going to lose an hour of sleep. I love this part of the daylight savings time. I wish we just let it naturally happen without moving the clocks forward or backwards. But it will be still light longer. It feels like you have more time to get more done in the daylight with daylight savings. So remember, you guys, if you're in an area, not all states do it, but spring your clock forward if you're in an area where it does this weekend so you don't show up somewhere late, either on Sunday or Monday morning. But I just want to thank you for being here with us on Off the Shelf Books this morning. Before we introduce you to our awesome guest, I just want to, this is a book, one thing that we all can benefit from as long as we're here is really getting to know our real true self, our real true higher self. Some people say your authentic self. I mean, that is just such a blessing to really get to know who you are, because if not, the world will start navigating you, and you think you're somebody, take on an identity that's not even really who you are. And in peaceful ways, whether it's getting out in nature, journaling, or reading a book, or just doing a hobby or a passion. But if you're looking to heal and you see the value in that inner healing and finding out who you truly are, I really want to introduce the book to you, Heal Gorgeous. Wisdom Within You Knows the Way. It's an ebook, paperback, and hardback. You can get it bookstores anywhere, Barnes & Noble, Kobo Books. I'm trying to think of the other Google. Is it Google Books? It's so many different places. Amazon, small local bookstores, Heal Gorgeous, Wisdom Within You Knows the Way. And it's by yours truly, Denise Turney. It's getting wonderful, wonderful reviews. And I hope you will gift yourself with a copy and let that book bless you. And now let us go and meet our very special off-the-shelf guest. And this morning's guest is Tyler Swank. I hope I said his name right, and if I didn't, I hope he corrects me. Tyler is a short story writer, a novelist, and a filmmaker. His short stories have been published in several periodicals, including Chaotic Merge, Fiction, Southeast, and Havoc. He's a graduate of New York Film Academy, you all, and Minnesota State University, Moorhead. Tyler's films have appeared at film festivals where they have won awards. And for his work, Tyler has also been granted a Minnesota TV and Film Grant. In addition to graduating from New York Film Academy and Minnesota State University, Moorhead, Tyler has earned an MFA from Hamline University. Breaking In is his first novel. Please check Tyler Swank out online at tylerswank.com. He kept it simple, but I'm going to spell it. TYLERSCHWANKE.com. And again, TYLERSCHWANKE.com. You can actually hop over to his website. This is one thing that I love about the show. You can hop over to his website and learn more about him. Even as you listen to today's show, we are just honored to have Tyler here with us on Off the Shelf this morning. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Tyler.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to what you should. So many of our guests, they do so many things. I always say busy people always find time to do something else. The busiest people always find time to lead something in the community or do something in the arts. They always find a time to do something else. So I'm looking forward to what you share with our listeners here on today's show. Now, the first few questions I ask every guest, Tyler, are generally the same, just to give our listeners a little backstory on our guests before I start talking about their books and their other works. So to start today's show, will you please tell off-the-shelf listeners where you grew up and what life was like for you growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've never been asked that before on a talk show. That's fun. So I am in – right now I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I grew up kind of around in the Midwest in different states. My dad worked in logistics, and so he was a – part of a trucking company. He was a manager, so we moved around a lot. So I was born in St. Paul, Minnesota, and then moved to North Dakota, moved to Iowa, Illinois, Kansas, and then we moved back to Minnesota when I was in seventh grade. So kind of just, yeah, traveled around the Midwest a bit and kind of saw different parts of the country and landed back here in Minnesota, in a suburb of Minneapolis of the Twin Cities. Went to junior high and high school there, graduated. And then I think like most of us do, right, didn't know exactly what I wanted to go into and ended up, first just going to school, just kind of get my generals done. And then I've always had a passion for movies and storytelling. So then I went to the New York Film Academy and then graduated.
Wow.
Finished up schooling. So I lived in New York for a year, and the New York Film Academy, I think now it's like a different program or they offer more, like they offer college credits. And when I went, it was me and one of my best friends from Burnsville, Minnesota, which is where I went to school, junior high and high school. And so we decided to do this one-year program. And basically, kind of like in a nutshell, like when you do a four-year filmmaking program, like the first 2 years is all about theory and critique and, you know, understanding to move a camera and watching a lot of films. And with this, when you do like a 1 year program, it's here's a camera, go tell a story. So I really love that aspect about, you know, it was two Midwest boys all of a sudden in the biggest city in the world with cameras and saying, go out and find your story. So, I think that's kind of what I've been doing ever since, right? Is kind of finding the right lens to tell a story, whether or not it's been in short films. So I've written a script. But really, I think it was probably about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, I really decided that novels were calling. It was something I wanted to try at least. You know, I felt that it was something that I could easily move into with my background. And I've always been just a huge reader. That was something that was instilled in me by my parents. My mom would read with me and, you know, kindergarten, we'd read like Laura Ingalls Wilder and C.S. Lewis. And then pretty quickly, like second and third grade, we used to come up to our cabin quite a bit. So Minnesota is like lake country, right? Everybody has either a cabin or they have a cabin they can go to in the summertime. So even when we didn't live in Minnesota, we would travel up here for like 2 weeks out of the year in the summer. And my parents, you know, they would take us to the beach and it's basically, we're going to be at the beach for 10 hours. This is your day today. So put on sunscreen, entertain yourself. And if you didn't want to be in the water for that long, they would read, and after I would get done with my books, I would start reading their books. So I was reading like Stephen King and Michael Crichton and John Grisham when I was in like second grade. And,
wow! Oh,
you know, I just loved them. I just like, especially like Jurassic Park. You know, I'd seen that movie, but the book is way different. And you know, it's a little bit more violent, kind of scary, especially for a second grader. But those are things that I've got really invested in, you know, and my parents figured, well, he's reading, you know, there's worse things he could be doing. And kind of from there, so I've always had this love of novels and reading kind of in the background. And that's always been, you know, part of just me wanting to tell stories and So I decided to give it a try. In 2011, I want to say. Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you were a young boy, you went to the beach and you were outdoors and reading and you loved film. But what did you, when you were a kid, what did you dream of being? What did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid? I love that when I ask this, people tell me all kinds of stuff. Well, when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I think I wanted to be an actor more than anything. I knew that I wanted to be, because I loved movies so much, and I didn't know, like, I didn't know all the different jobs, right? You just see what's in front of you. When you watch movies, who do you watch? You watch the actors, right? Because the director, the screenwriter, all that stuff, that's all behind the scenes. So I loved movies. I knew I wanted to work something in movies, but I think I wanted to be an actor more than anything. And that, I mean, that quickly kind of disappeared once I hit like junior high and my face broke out, right? With, you know, but it was just more of like, I don't necessarily want to be the one in front of people. Not that I enjoy, like, as far as, you know, like, presentations, I like meeting people. It's been really fun since my book came out to, like, go and meet people and do readings and that kind of thing. So I have no issues with that. But, like, as far as acting and that kind of stuff, and I did some in film school, and I just wasn't good at it. It just wasn't my cup of tea. I really wanted to. But I also wrote, the first thing I ever wrote kind of outside of school was I started a script, and it was about a Hollywood premiere that gets hijacked by terrorists. And I was going to play the youngest actor whose premiere it was. And then there was like parts for, I didn't even give them character names. I knew Will Smith, Jim Carrey, and Jennifer Love Hewitt were going to be in it. And so that's what, like, their character names are, like, their real names. And so it's going to be the three of them and me in this movie called Premiere. So I always wanted to tell stories about movies, about Hollywood, that kind of stuff. And so it was kind of instilled at an early age. But yeah, I wanted to be an actor at the beginning, and then grew out of that as we all do.
You stuck with that story though. So many people come on, and we've had guests from all over the world. It's just amazing to hear how people get to where they are now. They start different paths to get to where they are now. Now, which revealed itself first for you? Was it filmmaking or the writing passion? And I'm going to guess it was filmmaking.
As far as like script telling, and I think for me that was the main goal. I think of myself as a visual storyteller, and the visual storytelling I think has translated well for me into the novel aspects and novel writing. But yeah, it was something where, you know, I always had a passion and just, you know, huge interest in movie making, and I dabbled a little bit in, like, not necessarily music video stuff, but like editing stuff to music. It's kind of where I first got my start. I did this for my senior year. I put together a kind of like a music video set to different footage that I got from like the AV club at my school, and then I took a camera and went around and shot, like, you know, just like handheld footage of the senior class, you know, in between classes and kind of hanging out. And I put together this 3.5 minute kind of music video set to this Jimmy World song, and we played it at our senior banquet. And I just remember, like, I mean, and also one thing to remember, so this is like 2003. So 2003, like, music videos are a big deal back then, right? You know, it like MTV actually played music videos. So it was something where, like, I grew up after school, we'd go home and we'd watch TRL and we would see music videos and we'd vote on them and stuff. So I think for me, that was a big kind of influence. So I started with this video for my senior class banquet. And I just remember really enjoying you know, watching this thing I created with an audience and having an audience reaction and being part of it, it's like instantly, it's terrifying and instantly gratifying, you know. So, and that's something that I was like, oh, this is really cool, and this is something that I enjoy doing. And so that's when I went into, I went to film school, and that grew, right? When I would make these, you know, I make short films, and then you play them first for your class, and you play them for an audience, and then eventually, you know, I would go to film festivals, some student-focused, a lot of them that weren't. I got to do a little bit of traveling. So I was mainly out of, you know, North Dakota, but a lot of these films played around the country. So, but yeah, it just kind of translated well into me, and I think it was that audience reaction that I really, really enjoyed. Again, very what? Terrifying. My wife – oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No, your wife. You said your wife.
Oh, I was just going to say, so I was just going to say, as far as like being live with an audience, like I love that fact, but again, it's very terrifying. So my wife has to hold my hand like whenever we watch one of my films, because like the whole time, because I'm just like,
oh,
okay.
You know, like, oh my God, that immediate reaction. Your book, they got to read the book,
yeah.
And they tell you what they think about it. But a film, it's like as it's happening, there's like different parts of
you're
life.
You're in it.
And
yep,
like,
exactly.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's reaction
oh
in real
God.
Time. So it's a different medium for sure, different experience.
Now introduce us, two more questions, then we're going to start talking about breaking in. Introduce us to your first two short stories. Can you please introduce us to your first two short stories? What's happening briefly in those stories, because we want to dig into breaking in.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So the question is just some short stories that I've written?
Yes, your first short stories. Because that's how you got started with the writing, correct?
And it is how I got started. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So my first short story, I think the first one that was ever published was called Smoke Rings, and that is in a magazine called eFiction, and you can buy it on Amazon. And that is one about a kind of a broken home kind of family and a young girl that's looking to kind of get out of the situation, and she's kind of putting her faith in the wrong guy. It's kind of more of a cautionary story. And I think, you know, that really sprung up from real life. You know, I based it on a friend of mine, her family situation. Also, I think it was one of the first short stories I wrote for my MFA program. So when I started school for my MFA, you know, you have to write a lot of short stories. And I never thought of myself really as a short story writer. And I definitely prefer novels. I love that kind of that long kind of overarching arc for the characters and kind of setting everything up and then, you know, end and as you go. And it's a lot harder to pull off, I think, in short stories. But my first one was more of a cautionary tale, and it was more of like, I feel like kind of what you're supposed to write in an MFA program, something more serious. I'm a little bit more, my novels are more humorous. I'm more kind of action-packed. My second short story that got published, honestly, I don't know which one it was. Another one that I really, really liked was about a world where a future where time travel is possible. So this guy goes back to his younger self when he's in high school, and he tries to help himself get over a bad breakup with a girl to say that, you know, because this breakup kind of like ruined his life. Like it's something he focused on too much and never really got over. So he sends he goes back to the past to talk to his former self to try to convince him. And throughout the course of the story, he ends up falling back in love with the girl that broke his heart. just kind of saying that, like, you know, you can't control love, and sometimes love hurts, and that's just part of it. That's part of growing up. And I think, and that came from, again, that has more of the humor in it that I really enjoy. It's also probably a little nod to Back to the Future, which is like my favorite movie of all time. So at some point I was definitely going to write some kind of time traveling piece. So those are my first two stories. You know, I think that were published.
Oh.
You know, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, no, I just say, yep, so those are like my first two. But they are pretty different, you know, than what Breaking In is and what my novels are, because I think with the short stories, I was still finding my voice. I was still finding about kind of what I wanted to center on, what I wanted to, what kind of themes, you know, really interested me. But, you know, thing that translates in any book that I write or short story, it's all about character. It's all about relationships, right? How do people interact with one another? How do they get by with one another? Because to me, I think that's the most interesting is when we have characters that are radically different and they try to work together, you know, to achieve something.
I like that second one. Both of them sound interesting, but that second one. And then when you said he fell in love with the same, I'm like, oh, man, he went. So a lot of times we think, if I could go back and do something, I would make a different choice. How often
right.
do we say, you know, if I could just go back and with the, what I know now, I wouldn't repeat what I did. But would you not repeat it?
Right.
So that's very interesting. So now, just to kick in, I'm really interested in diving into your novel. Could you give us a synopsis
mm-hmm.
of your debut novel, Breaking In?
Absolutely. So Breaking In is about Millie Blomquist. She's a 17-year-old filmmaker from Fargo, North Dakota. She has spent the last 2 years saving up all her money to go to a film school in New York that is run by her favorite director, Ricky O'Neill. So because she's in high school, this is like a summer film camp program. It's like 10 weeks, and part of the program is you bring a feature-length script, and it's part of a competition. So you bring a feature-length script, and then you have a shorter version where you go up and you try to get a crew to make a short version of the movie, and then it's a competition against the other teams. And then whoever has the best short film gets, I think the cash prize is like $500,000 to go towards the feature-length script to make the movie.
Okay.
So it's a very kind of well-known program, competition. Past winners have, you know, sold their movies and gone to Sundance and, you know, been in theaters, so it's kind of a big deal. So Millie goes to this film school, and right before she's able to finish her movie, the film school is closed down because Ricky, who runs the school and is also a director, he's arrested for fraud, fraudulent charges for stealing from the students. So 7 months later, the film school closes. 7 months later, Millie's in, you know, finishing up her senior year of high school. She goes to the movies. She's sitting in a movie theater. She's watching the coming attractions. And a preview comes up, and it is a shot-for-shot, almost remake of her short film from the film school. And at the end, she sees that it's the new movie from Ricky O'Neill. So what happened was,
oh my gosh,
because he stole her movie because of the competition and the way that it's set up. He owns the rights, and he can do whatever he wants with it. So he took the script, made it himself, and he doesn't have to give her any credit. So she goes to confront him and finds all this out, that she has no bearing, but he gives her $20,000, essentially in hush money, right, to say, there's nothing you can do, but I'm sorry about this, you know, I don't want you going to the press, here you go. And instead of taking that money and keeping silent, Millie takes that $20,000. She rounds up her film crew that helped her make the short film, turns them into a heist crew, because the script that he's stolen is a heist movie. And so Millie has all this heist knowledge. So she takes the $20,000, she takes her heist knowledge, and they make a plan to steal the movie 3 days before the premiere and hold it for ransom.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah,
oh,
so that's
my
it.
God. What's Millie's personality like? Is she like a daredevil? Is she what is her personality like?
Yeah, Millie is very intense at times. She's very focused, and she's very untrustworthy. Untrustworthy of other people, I should say, cautious. So the movie that she had stolen from her, it's really personal to her. It's a movie about her father who died 3 years earlier in a bank robbery. He was part of it. They were so at the time, Millie's family. He had just lost his job working security at a bank because of COVID. And so he decided they were running low on funds. They were about to lose their house. So Millie's dad got together with this crew. They decided to rob the bank, and Millie's dad was killed during it. But Millie doesn't see her dad as someone that would do this, right? Millie sees her dad as this goofy guy who, you know, was basically at the end of his rope and really needed, you know, didn't have any other options. So he turned to crime to provide for his family. So she wants to make this movie to show the real side of her dad, right? And the fact that Ricky O'Neill is made it instead of her, that's really personal to her, right? That feels really, that's like, you know, salt in the wound. That's like a double-edged sword. So she's very determined. She's a little too focused at times, because she's so concentrating on her plan that she doesn't really see that, you know, a good plan also has to allow improvisation, right? So does directing, and so does being a friend with somebody. And so really throughout this, Millie, when she's pursuing, you know, getting the movie back, she's also connecting with her film crew in a way that she didn't when they were making the movie, and she's opening herself up. So Millie is, she's funny. She's kind of a geek. She's very focused, though, on her objective, and, you know, that's her strengths, but it's also her negatives, too, right? Because that means sometimes she misses things that are out of her grasp, and that's what she needs to learn about as she goes.
Wow, this sounds like such a good story. Without giving the story away, I know you talked about her father in the bank robbery, which, I mean, this story has so many parts to it. Does she discover, don't give it away though, does she discover anything about her father that she wishes she hadn't known, that she wished she had never come to know while she was creating the film?
But she does discover something about his death. But I won't say what, because that's a big kind of reveal towards the beginning of the third act. So
she,
not so much about him, but she learns something about the situation that kind of all ties in at the end. Yep.
So Ricky O'Neill, he's running this film school, and the winner gets this $500,000, and then he's caught. And did you intentionally make that link? Her father he loses his job, he robs the bank, and then he gets shot. And then Ricky, somebody else she trusts at the film school.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you deliberately do that, or is that something that just kind of organically happened in the story as you were developing it?
Definitely organic, but like one of those happy accidents, right? Where you're like, oh, yes. You know, once you realize, you read that, you're like, oh, that's perfect. Let's make sure that moment doesn't go unnoticed, right? Let's make sure Millie reflects on that, so the reader can reflect on it too. It was initially set up where, you know, so the premise is always going to be that she gets her script stolen. But initially the script wasn't about her dad, and it was something where just working through edits where, you know, it just became obvious, like, you know, well, let's have the script have a bigger meaning to Millie outside of just, you know, yes, it's her dreams to make movies, but what is it about this movie in particular that really stands out? And that's where it was okay. And her dad had already passed. And it just was one of these things where, like, well, we can really tie this together and make all of this. And then once it did that, you know, it was like, oh, wait, okay. So she's already kind of hesitant, right, because of what happened to her dad. And now she gets, you know, double-crossed kind of in the same way, you know. She doesn't die because of it, but she feels emotionally, you know. That was something that definitely wanted to reflect on. And then also I have Millie's mom that, you know, reflects on that too, you know, that Millie was kind of double cross in the same way. And double cross is just in general are big, you know, it's a big trope when it comes to heist movies and robberies. So it's something that I play with quite a bit throughout the novel, you know, making them the twist subtle enough where you don't see them coming.
Wow. It just sounds like a page turner. Now, Ricky O'Neill, just the fact that he took these students' money and stuff, and it's like, okay, I already don't like this guy, but is this just the way he's been? You know, you even watch documentaries on people who get in trouble and they get caught after decades of doing something, and they say, oh, they've been doing that since junior high, acting like that, or something since high school. Was he that kind of guy, or was he? How would you describe Ricky O'Neill?
Ricky O'Neill is a very proud filmmaker that has his hands financially and emotionally tied. So you learn throughout the course of the book that this kind of stealing from students, this illegal activity is not something he did, but something that he kind of grew into once he came to Hollywood, because there's actually a lot more to his story than just the fact that he's, just a bad guy who, you know, couldn't think of a movie or saw a good movie and decided to steal it for himself. So you learn that Ricky has been, his movies have been basically laundering money for the mob, and that they have been financing his movies, and that the film school was one way that they laundered the money. So when the film school closes, Ricky is really in a bind where he can't launder the rest of this money, and he owes some people some really, you know, he owes them a lot of money. You also learn that his last two movies have bombed, so he really needs a hit, otherwise it's going to be really bad for Ricky. So him, when he steals Millie's movie, there is a desperation there that he has basically been given an ultimatum that he needs to do something to make them a profit, or essentially they're going to kill him. So while it's not something where you totally feel, sorry for Ricky, you see the motivation and see that it's more than just a director that, you know, wants to steal them, or not wants, but, you know, steals a movie from a student. There's a lot more going on there. And so as the story progresses, you know, and he's having to deal with Millie, he's also dealing with a lot of other factors as well, that don't come to light, for Millie and her crew until much later on in the book.
Wow, the more you talk about this story, breaking in, it's just, oh, my gosh. It's like, I'm sitting there like, where you came up with this? So I want to ask you this. That's like you said, the mob involved in the money laundering for the film. Has that ever really happened? Have you ever heard of anything like that really ever happening?
You know, I don't know necessarily if it's probably to the extent where I do it. You definitely hear about, you know, like Teamsters, mobsters being involved in like the unions and stuff when it comes to different films.
Wow.
You know, so I think there's stuff that like that where it certainly takes place. But it was just this really interesting kind of idea, you know, just watching just like TV shows, watching like Breaking Bad and stuff, right? And places always have to have, you know, that front, right, to you know, a business to launder the money. And I thought, well, what if, you know, wouldn't that be interesting if it was somebody that was actually like, you know, a producer or they're called investors in the book. You know, they never refer to them as the mob. Ricky always considers them, he always thinks of them as the investors that he has to answer to. And I think in a way, right, that all directors have to, answer to their investors and to the studio. And I just thought that was an interesting concept. But what if we took it one step further, instead of, you know, a producer or a studio is threatening to end a director's career, they're not only doing that, but they're also threatening to end his life, you know? So that puts more stakes on Ricky.
Oh my gosh! Now, what is the pace of the story? Is it fast paced read? And why did you choose the pace of the story?
Absolutely, yeah. It is a fast paced read. You know, this is it's a fun story. It's a humorous story, but it's also an edge of your seat nail biter. And I did that because those are the kind of books and movies and TV shows that I enjoy most. So I think, you know, when you are a writer and you're having to read the, you know, I've read Breaking In probably over 100 times in different different variations. I've only read the actual book once when I was done. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, cool, I got it. But, you know, and I think it's just you – when you're spending so much time, you know, especially with me, I have a full-time job, so I write in the mornings, I write on weekends. I want to write something that I would want to read. So for me, you know, I want there to be emotion behind it. I want there to be, intent. I want there to be authentic characters that you cheer for. I also want to make sure that at no point do you feel that the story is slogged down, that there's too many, you know, too much information or too much going on, because there is a lot going on in the book, you know, and it jumps from different characters' point of view. And I just did that because I thought I love building suspense by jumping from different points of view, because then the reader gets to learn stuff that the characters haven't learned yet, right? And then that's what builds the suspense for them, is because we think we know what's going to happen because we know something that Millie doesn't know or Ricky doesn't know. And that just goes back to, you know, I first learned about that in film theory, watching Alfred Hitchcock movies. You know, you would always see, like famous scene from Psycho, right? She's taking a shower. We see the door open behind her. We see the curtain drawn back, the knife up, long before she ever does. And this is something that's fun to play with. Stephen King does that a lot too, on writing one of his memoirs. It's like my favorite book of all time. He talks about building suspense that way by telling the audience information before somebody else knows it, or before the character knows it. So those are just the kind of things that I really enjoy in books, and I wanted to, you know, incorporate that in my debut. And also just, you know, I want it to be something where I don't want to put something out that I wouldn't love to read and be excited about myself.
Introduce us to two or three other characters in Breaking In who helped move this story forward.
Yeah, so you have Aaron. Aaron works at Howard Security, which is a security firm based out of Fargo, North Dakota. So it's fictional. It's like based upon Stanley Security, which is where I actually worked for about a year after I graduated college, and kind of where this idea came from. But so he runs a call center. He was also Millie's dad's best friend. So he was somebody that was always around Millie growing up. He's kind of a goofball, kind of a lovable, down on his luck, not loser, but he certainly, you know, has room to grow and to kind of get back into the swing of things. He's been recently divorced. He's kind of gullible. He really cares for Millie because of how much, he was her dad's best friend. And so she comes to him once she has the heist kind of planned out. So, you know, the heist is to steal the movie 3 days before the premiere. So the plan is to break into Ricky's Chicago film production studio where the movie is being edited. And the production office, is monitored by Howard Security. So Aaron becomes her inside man, and he is way out of his element. He has no idea what he's doing. And he kind of goes down into kind of his own little adventures on the end, where he gets kind of duped by the wrong girl, and he, kind of tells some information maybe that he shouldn't have. So he really kind of adds a lot of humor, but also complications to Millie's plan later on. So Aaron is a fun character. And then Millie's mom, I'll do Millie's mom and her stepmom, I think are super fun because they are basically just kind of a hodgepodge of different Midwest mannerisms and people that I've known over the years, people, you know, parts of what, you know, so they live in Fargo, North Dakota, which is where my in-laws live. So there's some parts of them in there. There's some parts of just growing up in the Midwest. They're very kind of quirky. They're very protective of Millie, but at the same time, protective, but also very kind of firm in what they believe she should be doing. And they're, you know, they want her to get away. The mom especially wants her to stop, Millie, to stop focusing on this movie, stop focusing on her, you know, her deceased dad, who was essentially a criminal, and to, you know, focus on something else in her life. And so there's always a kind of a constant friction between Millie and her mom as we go here. But she's a fun character. And this book is all, there's also an audio book, extremely well done. I have two actors that are just phenomenal, knocked out of the park. Jesse Valinsky is a narrator, and she does like the best Midwest impression of Millie's mom. And I know so many people that sound like that. So it's a lot of fun. And those are, you know, I just noticed the characters that I just shared, they represent kind of where Millie's from, right? The Fargo side, the Midwest side, where Millie is now, but now, you know, where she wants to go to is Hollywood. And that's represented by Ricky. So there's kind of these two lives that Millie is kind of walking in between. She's trying to find her place. And I just think it's kind of fun. And that just comes from me, you know, growing up in the Midwest, but going to school in New York, living out there for a while, you know, trying to, you know, get into to movies, and then later on, you know, trying to get into publishing. It's always interesting, you know, when you're talking with people in different parts of the country about what resonates with, you know, with your story.
Mm-hmm. Now, will there be a sequel to Breaking In?
You know, there definitely can be a sequel. It's very much open to it. There's kind of a wink and a nod there at the end. But it's something that if there isn't ever, it's a fully told story, right? You know, you have resolution at the end with Millie, with everything that happened. So, you know, there's one, I have an outline. I think it would be fun to have a sequel. There are no plans for, you know, I've been working on other projects. I'm right now on submission for my next book. So at this time, there's no immediate plans, but I think it would be fun for there to be one, because it definitely leads up to it, and I have kind of a fun premise for Millie and her crew.
Okay. Now, what have readers been saying about the book Breaking In?
There's been a lot of, you know, talk about the humor, about the wit, the twists, the turns. There's been people that have, you know, just, you know, I want more, people that are hoping for a sequel, people that really have enjoyed Millie and her film crew. So, yeah, and there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the fast pace, the you know, it's a tight thriller. It's something that I spent a lot of time to really make sure that it was a, you know, if you love suspenseful thrillers, this book's going to be for you.
Okay. Now, so I want to make this clear for our listeners. There are some humorous characters, like the guy who works with Millie's father, and he's working with her, and he says he's way out of his league in helping her pull off this heist. Is it more of a comedy, or is it more of a fast-paced suspense thriller?
I think it's both. Honestly, it has elements of both. I mean, I think if you were going to put it in a, you know, like, well, yeah, it would go under thriller as opposed to comedy. So, like, when I think of, like, comedy, I think of, like, Timothy Dorsey. You know, he writes those kind of humorous crime novels that take place in Florida. He is more humor, I think, you know, than what I am. So suspense is going to be first, humor is going to be second, tied with the characters, for sure.
Got to ask you this. Do you see this book as a film? Do you plan, are there any plans to turn Breaking In into a film?
You know, so my publisher has a movie division. They're out there right now, you know, talking with studios. So there's no immediate plans, but it's something that I think everybody involved would love to see. I know I certainly would when I was writing it. You know, I drew a lot of inspiration from heist movies in this, and that's something I haven't really even talked about yet. And so, you know, Millie is, and we talked about her character, and she's so so studious and so intense that she does all this research on heist movies. So she's always constantly referring to different facts and you know, homages. And I just think for me, it's something that this absolutely translates into something that, that could be made a movie or a series, I think would be fun as well. But really kind of dive into like movie geek culture, but also kind of that, that fun suspense kind of element to it. So I think it would make a really fun movie.
I hadn't intended to ask you this, but now I'm curious, and for our listeners, how much today does it cost to make a film, a major motion film? Could you make a major motion film with, like, just a $1 or $2 million today?
Not this script. I mean, or not this story. No, there's too many locations. You'd have to really kind of strip a lot of it away where I don't think it would look like a, the novel. It wouldn't look like the story that I've told. And answer your question, so it depends. You know, you hear, I'm trying to think of what movie just came out that was like three. I mean, those Avatar movies are like $250 million, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's preposterous. Like, I don't even know where you spend all that money. But they basically, you know, create, like, new technology. And the new Gladiator movie, there's a new Gladiator, there's a sequel to Gladiator that's coming out, I think, next year or maybe this year. And I think that's, like, close to $300 million. That to me is an insane amount of money. $1 to $2 million, you can definitely make, like, a really great low-budget, character-focused movie. So what I mean by that is there's no special effects, there's no, you know, big shootouts or that kind of stuff. Maybe a little bit, depending upon how much you pay your actors. But, you know, if it's a small cast, you know, meaning you don't have 30 talking roles, you have like four or five, you focus on a relationship or family or whatnot, you have limited locations, you definitely can make a movie with, you know, $1 to $2 million. Is Tom Cruise going to be in it? Absolutely not. he makes like, you know.
Oh, that's taking it up with $20 million right there. He's like. Okay.
Right, yeah. He makes like, well, he always does like because he produces his own movies too, so he gets a back-end deal. He makes like $50 to $75 million a movie. It's nuts.
Wow.
It's just, I think he made over $100 million on, that Top Gun Maverick. So, again, it just depends. Like, you're not going to make, you know, Top Gun 3 for $2 million. It's probably going to be another $300 million movie. Certainly can. And, you know, and I think budgets have gotten to be, that's too much, right? And that's how you hear about these Marvel movies now that aren't making as much because they cost, you know, so much money. So they have to make, like, $500 million just to break even because the movies cost so much, but then they spend another $100 to $200 million on marketing, you know, and that's super expensive too. So, it's quite a lot. But, you know, if you're watching Hulu and you see a new movie that comes on, you know, that debuts on Hulu only, that's probably something that didn't cost, you know, more than $5 to $10 million, just depending upon, you know, again, really who's in it. You know, if it's a really big name, sometimes they'll do smaller, low-budget movies, but sometimes they got to make a lot.
Oh, my gosh. So how do you get exposure for your films? And I want to talk about marketing a book. How do you get exposure? Do you have to, as a writer, I don't think bookstores are, they can be, but for me, it's when I've gone to large festivals that bring out, whether it's a cultural festival, and I have a booth, or I'm going as a writer to a festival that's bringing in a lot of foot traffic, and I mean 10,000 or more people are coming through. That I found to be good. But I'm curious, how do you, and then online ads and marketing, if you know how to work the ads, how do you get exposure for films? Is that just TV ads?
Well, like big budget movies, yeah. I mean, they'll do everything. They do everything from social media. You know, if you watch the Dune 2, right, that's the big movie that's out right now, and I can't go on Instagram without seeing footage from their main actors. They're at premieres all over the world. So it's, you know, and they go on talk shows, you know, there are ads, there are posters everywhere. So there's many different, you know, facets that you can do, you know, to promote a movie. It's kind of like promoting anything else. For me, when it comes to promoting this book and to getting it out there, so thankfully I've got a marketing team behind me. I've got a publicist. That's the word I'm escaping me. I have a publicist. She's fantastic. Her name is Sarah. She does a lot of work to get it out there. She sends the book to, you know, book talkers, Bookstagram, you know, people that read the book, review it. And then I've just been spreading the word as much as I can by doing a lot of podcasts, reaching out. I did North Dakota Today, which was a fun segment. It's a morning talk show in North Dakota, so I got to go be on TV for, it was like an 8-minute segment where I was just talking about my book with one of the hosts, so that was a lot of fun to get to do that and get to, you know, put the book out there and then just try to do different book signings, you know, around the states and, you know, hopefully just keep spreading the word. And it's just, you got to keep hustling, right? So right now I've got a new book that my agent is putting out on submission. And so while we do that, I keep working on the next one and try to get the word about Breaking In as much as possible, which is, you know, why I was so excited to be able to talk with you today and have your listeners learn about it.
Now, are you still going to continue to produce, make your own films as well, or you just totally left that behind and you're not fully into novel writing?
At this time, I'm 100% focused on novels. That's just something where it's what I enjoy the most. I definitely want to get back to movies at some point. I would love to write, like a script. I like the idea of translating my books into a script format, but I also have some ideas that I think would just work better as movies than novels. And so I would really like to, you know, put that on paper at some point here. But, you know, right now, like I said, I'm on submission. I'm working on, you know, kind of a final draft of the book after that. And I know what the next book after that's going to be. And it's just, I'm having so much fun when it comes to the novels that movies are just kind of being, you know, put aside right now while I focus on that.
And it is important for our listeners who, I know we have some interested in film and we've had movie producers on before on Off the Shelf, but it is important to keep coming out with new material. Even major, major artists do that. You have to keep coming out with new material instead of, you keep pushing your old, you know, your backlist books, but you have to still keep coming out with new material. That's a tip to our listeners. Now, I love the cover of Breaking In. Where did you get that book cover design concept?
Yeah, I know. Isn't that fun? Again, Blackstone, they did a great job. So for me, that came from, I actually got cover approval, which is something that, like, I don't think people ever get, especially when it's their debut. I've always heard that you kind of just have to accept whatever the publisher gives you, and Blackstone worked with me really well. But for me, I was just looking at different books that had come out in the last couple of years, ones that I really enjoyed and I was drawn to, because I think it's, despite the phrase, you know, don't judge a book by its cover, we all do that,
it's
though,
everything.
Right? I mean,
it's
we
everything.
All totally pick
it's
up.
Everything.
Yeah, we totally pick up. So for me, I looked at a couple books, and so Secret Identity by Alex Sugera is really awesome book about a female comic book writer in the 1970s, and his book has like comic panels on it, so different kind of squares with the photos, and then what's the name of that? There's a Colson Whitehead book. The name is escaping me right
Harlem
now,
Shuffle,
but that is
Harlem
also
it, was it Harlem Shuffle by Colson
again?
Whitehead?
Harlem Shuffle, yes, thank you.
Yes.
So Harlem Shuffle, I love
it.
So I love that cover. So I sent Secret Identity and Harlem Shuffle to the graphic designer, and I just said, you know, this is kind of fun, kind of where, you know, I was thinking kind of start with. So she had already put together the cool kind of marquee with the Breaking In logo, and then we kind of broke it up into different panels, and then all of the things that you see on here, the walkie-talkies, the white van, the gloves, these are all things that you would use in a heist, but you would also use in making a movie. So that's kind of the thing there is like what, you know, kind of walking that that line. So, yeah, I'm really happy with how it turned out. I think it's super fun. And for those that buy the hardcover, if you take off the cover, there's a really cool picture of like an old-time camera that's on the hardcover copy. So they did a really great job with it.
Can you give us, we only have like about 3 minutes left, but quickly, can you give us a glimpse into the next book you're working on? If you could just give us a quick glimpse into what that story's about.
Absolutely. It's about a disgraced former documentary filmmaker and L.A. stringer who is trying to create a true crime series after witnessing a man shot and killed on a light rail train by a Minneapolis police officer. And so as he's trying to put together this series, people that he's interviewing start being killed, and he becomes the number one suspect in their deaths. So he has to finish the series and find out the truth about the shooting on the light rail before either he goes to jail for the crime or he's a victim in his next series. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's something that, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's kind of like, Nightcrawler, meets, it's kind of, Sharp Objects. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah, so Nightcrawler meets Sharp Objects is kind of how we're selling it as, but that's another one that's not as humorous. This is more of a kind of suspenseful thriller type of book. So very excited to get that out there. And, editors are reading it now, so we're just out there trying to get that sold.
Wow, you come up with some great story ideas. Oh, my goodness. And not only do you come up with great story ideas, but I tell our guests on Off the Shelf, when people are good at describing their stories, that it intrigues the listener, that is very, very effective. And you're very good at describing your stories. Where can Off the Shelf listeners get a copy of Breaking In?
Absolutely. Yeah, anywhere that books are sold. So you can get it off Barnes & Noble, you can get it off Bookshop, you can get it off Kobo, you can get it off Google Books. So download it on, you know, your e-readers, hardcover is available, and then also the audiobook, which I mentioned as well, which is, again, two phenomenal actors that just really knocked out of the park and really elevate the story. So you can listen to it as well. It's on, you can buy it on Spotify and audible.com and all the other audiobook stores too.
And then lastly, if you're on any social media networks, can you tell Off the Shelf listeners where they can find you on social media?
Yep. So I'm on Instagram. I'm on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it these days. And then I have a Facebook page as well, where you know, you can find and follow me to learn about upcoming events, book readings, different podcasts or episodes. I post all of that there. You know, made available, or finish my you can visit, my website. You mentioned earlier, appreciate that. So it's, you know, it's TylerSchwanke.com.
Okay. Oh, we have had the absolute pleasure, and I have so many other questions I wanted to ask Tyler Schwanke, but we ran out of time. This breaking in sounds like the book, you guys. The pace, just the intrigue, it sounds very interesting. He's a graduate of the New York Film Academy and Minnesota State University, Moorhead. He's gone, switched out of film, not going to abandon it forever, but now he's into novel writing, and you just heard him talk about his next novel, which sounds very interesting. His website is TylerSchwanke.com. Now, this book, Breaking In, if you came in midstream or you came in late in the show, no worries. When it finishes streaming, you can go back and listen to it in its entirety in the archives as often as you want and share it. This sounds like a great audio book. Some people, I'm a paperback person, but I can see somebody loving an audio book. And he said there are two great voiceover actors that really bring this story, Breaking In, to life. Again, Tyler Schwanke, TylerSchwanke.com. Thank you so much, Tyler, for being here with us on Off the Shelf Books. And I thank all of our listeners. You can catch iTunes. We're just all over on so many different, people listen from so many different platforms to Off the Shelf Books. I want to thank you for a wonderful interview this morning, Tyler, and wish you the very best with your books. And to each of our listeners, thank you so much for being here with us. If you're in the U.S., remember, bring that clock forward. If you're in a place where they do daylight savings time, happy Women's History Month. And as I always tell you, you are amazing. You are phenomenal. You are incredible. Go out and create a fabulous day for yourself. See you back here next Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tyler, I'll send your contact a link to the show when it finishes streaming. Thank you. Bye for now.
Thank you.